Hey everybody, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we are visiting the oft-requested and oft-thought, it would be an episode, Flintstones, starring Rick Moranis and Halle Berry and Kyle MacLachlan, and of course, John Goodman as the eponymous Fred Flintstone. We thank you for your support. Please continue joining our Patreon. We have dozens of free episodes, about 50 hours of content almost. So please enjoy it. Once you get it, of course, you get all back episodes as well. And then finally, thanks for listening, subscribing, and consider giving us a review. It means a lot to us. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to Myopia Movies. I'm your host, Nick Hoffman. On panel we have
Matthew W. Quinn, who says you should support Mutual Aid Myanmar.
Hello, this is Daniel. I used to work in a rock quarry, but now I'm a frequent contributor to Popdose and a frequent annoyance to Nick.
Yeah, so we're doing 1994's Flintstones, starring John Goodman. The year after Jurassic Park, they thought, hey, let's do another dinosaur property. This movie is directed by, well, first of all, there's 30,000 people who wrote on this.
Including, I believe, the Die Hard writer.
Yes, he is, absolutely.
So one of those movies with multiple screenwriters?
Oh, well, this is a nightmare. Apparently, this script was in production hell forever. Yeah, it's a mess. This is directed by Brian Lamont, also directed of Stay Tuned episode Jingle All the Way.
No, it's the same guy?
And Beethoven, 1992's Beethoven.
Oh, good Lord.
And Snow Dogs, which I refuse to watch it, of course.
The sequel.
Viva Rock Vegas, which came out in 2000.
So many rock puns in this movie. I thought it was hilarious. My colleagues less so.
Yeah, well, because you're secretly a dad. You have some random family over in Idaho. We all know this, Matt.
Totally.
Totally. Not a total genetic dead end.
Okay.
All right, then.
I guess we got to talk first about this cast, because this cast is incredible.
The casting is one of the two great parts of this movie. It's John Goodman as Fred Flintstone. It's Rick Moranis as Barney. It's Rosie O'Donnell as Betty, which I don't like her, but perfectly cast in this movie. It's Elizabeth Perkins from Big as Wilma. Yep. And then Kyle MacLachlan and Halle Berry are in this movie.
And this came up during one of the social media discussions about this movie. Elizabeth Taylor as Fred's mother-in-law.
Yeah, we'll Pearl Slaghoople, the classic character, Pearl Slaghooper.
Who's even more obnoxious in this movie than she is in the TV show.
Well, let's back up.
But less obnoxious than Elizabeth Taylor was in real life.
Yeah, she's apparently a monster. But I will say, Matt, you nailed this, because this is obviously a show from the 50s and 60s, but these jokes are also all from the 50s or 60s. The put-upon mother-in-law, like the real shrew of a mother-in-law, that's all over this movie.
Yeah.
It stinks of it.
Well, the original show was a ripoff of Jackie Gleason. Yeah, The Honeymooners. What was the point of doing this as live action?
I don't know. Maybe someone thought it was a good idea and was going to throw money at it.
Well,
Steven Spielberg, apparently.
Spielrock. First of all, this is a Steven Spielrock production. They drive in to see Star Wars by George Lucas.
Yes.
George Lucas.
Yep, George Lucas, Star Wars.
Which is a Universal production, which it shouldn't be. It should be 20th century, rocks? It should be 20th century rocks production for Star Wars with George Lucas.
I'm already done. I am already done with these fucking puns.
We will get through this because these puns are everywhere.
Well, the puns are not done with you, Daniel.
Yeah, right. So this movie also has Barney Rubble, played by Rick Moranis. Apparently, Spielrock wanted Danny DeVito, but Danny turned it down, saying that his acting style was too gruff. And he suggested Rick Moranis, which he's right.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny.
Fred, can I offer you a nice egg in this trying time?
Oh, by the way, this is the most trying. Apparently, one version of the script had them wandering, Great Depression style, looking through work through the barren wasteland when the factory is closed.
Oh my god, this was going to be a Grapes of Wrath adaptation.
Yeah, I know. Is it, again, like, you want to throw out another director? Like, we have David Lynch. That's Lynch's version, I guess. But, you know, generally, I'm with you. I don't like...
I can imagine that being more of a Michael Moore thing where he's following the Flintstones as they look for work.
Or he keeps trying to get into Mr. Slate's office.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So, Rosie O'Donnell, I'm generally with you. I think she's generally best as a background actress. Like, she's fine delivering the two jokes she does in A League of Their Own. Or as the, like, kind of horny friend in Sleepless in Seattle. But the one thing she can do... is that laugh, that weird Betty Rubble laugh, which is apparently what got her the gig, because they didn't want her either, and then she nailed the thing, so they're like, well, I guess you're our Betty Rubble. This movie just seems like it's cobbled together of nothing.
They have a lot of the TV show plots, like Bam Bam's adoption.
Sure.
And the continuous fighting with the mother-in-law. But I think the main plot, you know, the corporate crime at Slate Co., is completely new.
My understanding about the original show is that it was meant to be a primetime cartoon for adults. It was basically the proto-Simpsons of the day.
Yeah, I think my dad told me that it was, you as an adult, like, you see a lot of jokes about like marriage and whatnot, but kids just watch it and think, oh, it's dinosaurs.
Right, exactly.
Right, and it ran for like six seasons in the 60s, and it would have fit in just like, you know, According to Jim or something like that, right? Like, you have two settings, work and home, and then occasionally you go to the Moose Lodge and he bowls. Like, that's all it is.
You know, these days I have a feeling Fred Flintstone would be more like whoever the fuck Tim Allen is in Last Man Standing.
Yeah, exactly.
Bonnie, I'm voting Republican.
Bonnie, all these women are everywhere, and they deserve less rights or whatever. That Tim Allen show is awful.
Well, it's, I think, done now, so hooray.
But yeah, I mean, and then very famously, I guess, it came back in like the early 70s for Pebbles and Bam Bam to get married, and it was like blockbuster television.
Yeah, because Barney and Fred are working as like mall security guards, and there's something called a schmoo.
No, I remember back on Cartoon Network back in the day, because, you know, Ted Turner bought all of Hanna-Barbera stuff. It was something about like Pebbles and Bam Bam in high school, and they were dating, and that was the whole show.
Yeah, and then eventually they got married, and like their marriage was like a big deal. Like, it was broadcast worldwide. Like, my grandparents in Europe have this book of Pebbles and Bam Bam getting married, or had.
Good long lord!
Although this reminds me, speaking of the same era. This is the same era that things like The Addams Family came out. The Beverly Hillbillies came out. Like,
this sounds like when Tiny Tim got married on The Tonight Show.
Mm-hmm. In a totally straight way. Not at all. Not at all weird. But we eventually have to do a Stay Tuned. Robin Williams stars as Popeye in that weird musical Popeye movie.
Oh, the Robert Altman movie?
The Altman movie?
I saw a commercial for that once.
I'm glad you've seen a commercial for it. Yeah, Have you seen the movie?
I've seen like a minute of that movie, and it was just weird.
It was one of those ones that was on Comedy Central in the, you know, whatever, 90s. And I watched the first act where they, what is his name? Winky? Sleepy? Who's the guy who always eats burgers?
Oh, Wimpy.
Wimpy. He has a song, I Will Gladly Pay You Tuesday for a Hamburger Today. And you're just like, what on, like, my mind broke in half, because I'm so used to watching these stupid, like, even the Flintstones. What is the Flintstones? It's a 24-minute animated show, and at the end they sell you some Winston cigarettes. It's like,
watch. Winston's tastes good, like a cigarette should.
Hey, Bon.
It's on YouTube.
Yeah, you've got to watch that Flintstone. Hey, Bon, the wives are working. We're smoking cigarettes.
They're literally mowing the lawn.
Yeah, and they're just sitting behind the house like they're smoking weed, and they're trying for their parents not to notice them. And they've pulled up a pack of, like, literally they must have just cut out an ad and put it in the animation frame. Winston cigarettes, it'll give you cancer twice as fast. Like, it is remarkable.
Apparently it tasted good. Thank you, Fred.
Thanks, Fred. So the smash cut open of this is Yabba Dabba Doo!
The smash cut opening is actually pretty, according to my notes, they introduce Halle Berry and Kyle MacLachlan before they ever introduce Fred.
That's true.
That's how they introduce Fred, is like, because Kyle MacLachlan is a sleazy corporate executive who wants to not only embezzle a large amount of money from the company, but also sabotage their products to deliberately destroy what's left.
Right.
Which I was kind of wondering, okay, greed is obvious. Why does he want to destroy Slate Co.?
He's playing the same character he played in Showgirls.
Yeah, so he's like, what I need is the dumbest man alive to make this work. Cut to Fred Flintstone.
Right. And so the idea is he's going to suck out all the profit and then fly to Rockapulco because we're here.
Because this movie opens up with as many rock puns as it can. Rockapulco, Halle Berry is Miss Stone. Bloody hell.
I think it's Sharon Stone. No,
it is Sharon Stone.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's not Rosetta
Stone. And apparently they approached her to be the actress Sharon Stone to be it, and she had better things to do with her time.
I would have loved to see a Flintstone spoof of Basic Instinct, famous scene right there.
And by the way, because we're here, this is written by literally 11 people paid to write this movie. But the final one, of course, matters the most, which is Stephen E. D'Souza, who is the one Daniel referred to at the beginning, the writer of Die Hard. But he also has written Commando, which we've done. He's also written Judge Dredd, which we have done. He has also written Ricochet, Stay Tuned this season.
The Stallone Judge Dredd?
Yes. 1995's Judge Dredd. Stay tuned next season for Ricochet, which he did. Hudson Hawk, which he did. Die Hard 2, which he did.
Okay, Die Hard 2 is good, though, so I'm not going to give him shit for that. But didn't he also direct Street Fighter, which we just released as we're recording this?
He did. And he also did Lara Croft the Tomb Raider.
Oh, God.
Everything he's done is an episode.
It's an era
in our lives.
How did they look at this man and say, you know what? Rock puns. That's the guy who's going to make rock puns for us.
I'm going to guess it's two movies. He also did Running Man, which, stay tuned.
Oh, that's a great movie.
And Jumping Jack Flash, the one with the guy
Whoopi
from the...
Goldberg, yeah. I remember that.
Oh, my God. This man is just... He is like a film terrorist at times. This is great.
Can we go ahead
and... if he's on Twitter, we can tag him in all these.
Please don't. I don't want to get more hate.
Can we go ahead and go over...
Not everyone loves you.
Please don't call attention to us making fun of celebrities who can destroy us, Matt. Please.
I don't think he could destroy us, but I understand what you mean, Nick.
Yeah. Don't tattle Twitter.
Can we?
Because Catherine Mary Stewart liked our last Starfighter stuff. At least she liked the tweet.
Oh, she did?
Well, that's good. But we also didn't make fun of her. We're calling this man a cinematic terrorist.
Okay. I mean, he wrote Die Hard. That's all he ever needed to do. I don't care about the rest. But let's go ahead and get into the plot of this movie, because it's a very weird plot for a kid's movie.
Right. So while we were introduced to Sharon Stone and Cliff Vandercave.
That's his name. Yes. Okay.
We then have Fred Flintstone do the clock out bit, right? We do have the theme song near the beginning.
Right, and the whole ending where they go to the drive-in afterwards and they're a Stone Age car.
Yep. To watch Tar Wars.
Except it's not Tar Wars. It's apparently this movie.
Well, yeah, at the end, it turns out that we've Jacob's Ladder the whole thing, and they're watching themselves on the big screen.
But Jacob's Ladder. So Fred died in an industrial accident. This is all his, like, dying dream.
I mean, it makes as much sense as anything else in this movie.
Personally, I thought it was more of a Pee-wee's Big Adventure thing. Paging Mr. Flintstone, paging Mr. Fred Flintstone. But anyway, yeah, that's what's going on. But in the movie proper, which, again, this makes no sense for a kid's movie. Fred has given his and Wilma's life savings away to Barney so he can adopt a child. And then Barney decides... Well, I have to pay him back somehow. And the way he does that is during some sort of executive test. He switches tests with Fred so that Fred becomes the new junior executive at the, I don't know what it's called, the Slate Corporation?
Yeah, in order to find their patsy, they decide they're going to create an executive training program. And the person they'll pick is one of the highest standardized test score. So they're already making standardized test score jokes.
Which makes no sense, by the way, in terms of their plan. Because
zero sense.
Presumably, you'd pick the stupidest guy, not the smartest guy who scores the highest on the test. But anyway, that's what's going on with the villains. And so Fred becomes the new junior executive while Cliff
Vandercave.
Cave. Good Lord. Kyle MacLachlan and Halle Berry are embezzling money and trying to fire the workforce to introduce this new modernization that would eliminate the need for them in the quarry. And
some sort of machine that would make prefab houses.
Yes, basically.
Now, Kyle, I've been watching the dailies on the Flintstone movie, and it doesn't look very good, but have you considered the Jetsons?
You know, Nicholas, you're not doing a very good impersonation of me, I have to say. Now, Kyle, I offered to direct the Flintstones movie, but I wanted a lesbian sex scene, and apparently that was too much for the producers. No lesbians in the Flintstones? I'm not interested.
I said, what if Betty was in love with Sharon Stone? And they said, get out of my office. So I walked.
I have 2 Oscar nominations and a Palme d'Or, so I said no. Fuck you. If you're not going to let Rosie O'Donnell suck off Halle Berry, I'm not doing the movie.
It's not like Batman would do it or anything. Recent controversies.
Oh, boy.
So...
He clearly would, by the way, because God damn it, that's what heroes do.
And that's the only part of his face that's exposed. Okay, so next.
Matt's slowly ducking under the table right now.
Matt knows nothing about the oral sex conundrum with Batman.
I actually think commented on Facebook about that. You know, just because Batman has a repressed anger issues does not mean he's a selfish lover.
True. You know what? That's a fair take.
Thanks, Dr. Ruth. I will say... We have first, like I said, Barney Rubble is, you know, Fred gave him money, and we eventually, like, you know, we get this women be shopping joke, which is right out of the 1950s. Wilma goes shopping. Their credit card bounces, and I have so many questions about credit cards.
Wait, didn't that happen later with Betty?
Yeah, because the first money issue is Wilma thinks Fred had spent all their money on something stupid. He tries to pull rank on her and obviously cannot, and then he reveals that he's given them money, and he's like, she's like, oh, that's so sweet.
Well, first of all, I was wrong. She tries to use a credit card to buy a new garbage disposal.
Yes.
And we're introduced to this Jim Henson nightmare. Henson Company is thanked at the end of this, so we know it's a Henson Company design.
I like the practical effects in this movie. I wish more people would use puppets like this.
I agree, and I love that everything is real. It's tactile. Apparently, it was like 10 to 15% of the whole budget to make Bedrock. And you know what?
It shows.
And light touches an object except for that fucking cat at the end. You can read the IMDb trivia, but that cat that they keep trying to throw out is the first time they've rendered fur in an actual CGI, and it looks like garbage.
It doesn't look very good.
No.
I think and Dino are, I think, the only CG
creatures. Dino's a real puppet, but they use CG to make him move faster.
Right.
Dino
looked fine, I thought.
I thought he looked fine, but this pig beast is horrifying. So the garbage disposal isn't working, and it's literally a pig, which I guess if they throw it out, it goes to the slaughter or whatever. But there's a scene where John Goodman playing Fred is like, oh, don't worry, Wilmer, I can fix it. And he starts fisting this pig. He starts throwing
yes.
his whole forearm, and he pulls out all this silverware out of this living thing.
It was a fork.
And I'm just like, oh, holy shit. That is this like greasy, wet pig puppet. And he's just throwing his forearm down this. Oh my God.
Well, Nick has just had his mind broken.
Oh, dude.
Before we get to that, we get a whole bunch of what we're in for in this movie, which is rock puns. So Barney and Fred are driving home and they're listening to their local radio station, which is KAVE.
Yeah.
So I guess they're west of the Mississippi in Bedrock.
They are. Well done.
There are scenes that in the car, because the whole thing is that it's like propelled by their feet, but you hear that their feet and it just doesn't match up with the audio.
Through the courtesy of Fred's 2 feet, when you're
with the Flintstones, you'll have a due time.
Stop looking at me like that, damn it.
Oh, I was letting you run.
Well, anyway, during that car ride is when Fred and Barney talk about how Barney's about to adopt Bam Bam and how Fred financed it. So, and then we get to the garbage disposal bit.
Well, and it's, you know, and Wilma's like, so I tried to buy a new garbage disposal, and Fred's like, I can fix it. And he goes, there was no money left in our savings account. He explains, I'm helping the Rubbles adopt. And she's, you know, rightfully very happy with it. But you, as an adult, I mean, come on, tell your wife anything, man.
Before we get to that, we get to a scene with Fred on his favorite chair reading the newspaper, and that newspaper contains a reference to Alive.
Yes, it does. It does. This movie is, I hate him. I hate him. It could have been better with a Seth MacFarlane pass, because it tries to make current references and swings and misses. Actually, you know who would have been a good writer for this at the time? Someone like Conan O'Brien, who was working for the at the time for The Simpsons.
Yes.
Right? Like, because this tries to be topical and make punny references, but they all feel like swings and misses. Right? Like, because the thing is, eventually you need to get to a joke that can land outside of 1994.
The problem is that...
I like this movie. And it's 2021.
Okay. And I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying with a better writing, you could make it more timeless. And like, first of all, this is 1994. The year before was Jurassic Park. You have a movie with dinosaurs. How are there no Jurassic Park jokes?
Probably because Steven Spielberg said no.
Steven Spielberg loves being in things. The Animaniacs could have traipsed through this at this point. Like, he could have been the guy who's directing that weird industrial short we get halfway through. Like,
oh, we get a lot of weird scenes in this movie. But, I mean, I don't know. The opening is what the make and break for this movie. I mean, if you like the opening scenes, you'll like the movie. If you don't, then go ahead and turn it off after 5 minutes. But one of the big things about this is, first and foremost, it's a really adult plot for a kids movie, and this is aimed at kids.
Oh, yeah, and then they have the whole plot is they're trying to keep Fred dumb to what they're doing by having Mrs. Stone vamp on him constantly.
Even before that, you're right, Matt. We'll get to that later with young Halle Berry trying to present herself to John Goodman. But even beyond that, like there's a scene, a bowling scene where the entire bowling team that Fred's on gets drunk off their ass.
And Barney reads to Fred a poem he wrote thanking him for all the help he's been, which is really sweet.
Well, and I told Daniel this before we started recording, but that one scene, the bowling scene, was not in the original script, and people were like, we need more bowling, because that's the Flintstones. That's always the punchline in the Flintstones.
And that distinctive toe thing he does.
Twinkle toes. He does the twinkle toes thing. And again...
And that weird helmet he's wearing, the like big furry...
The Mason
the water
moose
buffalo.
Hat.
Yes.
They are the water buffaloes. Again, I love the Flintstones. I grew up with them. I love them. There wasn't a bowling scene, and so Spielrock got the one guy he knew who could direct, who was in Cinema Hell, which is John Landis directed those scenes, which is one of the few directing things he had done since that tragedy at the Twilight Zone.
He had done quite a few things after got those children killed in the Twilight Zone movie. But
he's not listed in the credits.
Okay.
This is something that just came out, like it was on the commentary track or something like that.
That he wasn't listed in the credits, you're right, but I mean, I think after this he did like Beverly Hills Cop 3 and The Stupids and
The Stupids is so bad.
Blues Brothers 2000. After that, he was done.
I mean, Blues Brothers 2000 should get everyone thrown into Hollywood jail, because that movie is bad.
Co-starring John Goodman.
Previous episode.
Well, I mean, you're right, though. The bowling scene is kind of amusing, but the biggest thing of that is, like Matt said, the poem that Barney reads about how he'll pay Fred back for sponsoring his adoption. And even in my notes, I'm looking at that, because that was so corny. I'm like, is this a Madea movie?
It's something. Well, and we also
if
get
it's a Madea movie, Barney would have to be in drag.
Oh, Lord.
I will say, too, there's a bit here that's very funny to me. Which is, he bowls a strike, he does a twinkle toes thing. And again, everything is practical, so the ball is like irregular, it looks great. But then he does the jump in the air and taps his heels, and you're just like, that took every pulley in Hollywood, my goodness.
He says yabba-dabba-doo a lot in this movie. I assume that was one of the scenes I honestly didn't keep track.
But I will say, him and Rick Moranis are doing a Barney and Fred voice, and it sounds good. Like, everyone in this is showing up, and we did Casper a million years ago, and you're just like, why the fuck is everyone showing up? But you grow up with this shit. Like, if they asked me to be, if I mattered at all, and they're like, will you be in a Clone High movie? I'm showing up for the terrible Clone High movie.
I'm waiting for my callback on the Freakazoid movie myself.
Oh, God. Can you? I mean, you can't say things like that.
Hug bees. Anyway, after the bowling scene is when Fred comes back home, and that's where we meet Liz Taylor, who is in this movie. Again, Liz Taylor, the multiple Oscar winner, the legendary actress. This is one of the last things she ever did in her career.
Legendary pain in the ass to work with.
When the Flintstones call, you answer.
Well, I mean, I wonder if they didn't, there wasn't like rumors of this movie and she demanded to be in it because her character matters zero. So I wonder if like she just like, do you have a role for Elizabeth Taylor?
It's setting up Fred to go for the executive position because he's trying to prove to his mother-in-law he can be somebody because she openly tells Wilma to cheat on him. Like, you should go date that Fred Firestone guy. Even if it doesn't work out, he can give you a new pair of tires.
She invented the wheel. Because Fred Firestone invented the wheel.
She does a good job as the pain in the ass mother-in-law.
Well, and I mean, again, everyone shows up. I mean, Kyle MacLachlan ate so much rock scenery, he shat bricks. Like, oh, I don't know how he's doing this. Except for, we'll get there. But he shows up with a gun at the end of this movie. And that is stupid as shit.
Well, I mean, that's right, though. That's what incentivizes Fred to finally be somebody so that he can, impress his rich mother-in-law, which, if I recall correctly, Seth MacFarlane ripped off in Family Guy.
He did. I will also say, she gave me a truly legitimate laugh in the third act of this movie. Like, she's a part of the laugh that I got, and we'll get there when we get there.
Just one laugh?
No, I mean, I enjoyed this movie throughout, but I literally had a knee slapper in the third act of this, and we'll get there.
I was howling like a crazed monkey at the gym watching this on my Kindle. This movie is hilarious.
Oh, good.
You're frequently howling like a crazed monkey on a lot of things you do there, Matt.
We have to be very careful about the comedies we do. We were talking to my daughter beforehand. She liked this movie. And it's hard not to, how do I put this? This is a movie that when it's on, you have to watch because it looks remarkable.
Oh, all the practical effects that they're doing, all the puppets they have. You're not wrong, Nick. This looks fantastic.
Yeah. So at this point, as you mentioned, there's an aptitude test, which, again, it's great. They have these biblical tablets, like you're watching the Ten Commandments, and they're chiseling into these SAT answers.
Also, we have Richard Mole in that scene where Kyle MacLachlan's announcing it. For those who are around our age, Richard Mole, in case you've forgotten, was Two-Face in the Batman animated series.
Yeah, among other things. He's also from a sitcom I watched a lot with my parents growing up. He was in Night Court. He is apparently a friend of Brian Levant, the director, because he's also in Jingle All the Way. But he's just, Fred has a bunch of big hulking dudes, all in incredible costumes, who are on the bowling team. They're dudes who are working with its Slate Co.
Was the name of the company. I did not realize that.
Slate, he's the bald guy who looks like Mr. Turtle from the Dana Carvey movie at the end with the bottle glasses who goes, Flintstone!
Well, that's how he looked in the cartoon, to be fair.
Again, they nail the creative design. I don't know who the set designer was, but I hope he or she got all the work in the world because it looks phenomenal.
Well, anyway, in this scene is the aptitude test that we referenced earlier, and they're chiseling on using a number two chisel, keep in mind.
Number two chisel.
Which he erases later, which is a funny joke. Again, that's a funny bit where he's chiseling it in with a hammer and chisel, and he's like, shit. And he's trying to erase it with the back end of a chisel, which is not how anything works.
Which is funny. And Barney sees how badly he's done, and to pay him back, he switches his results with Fred's.
Right. Which is stupid for two reasons. First of all, what you pointed out earlier, Kyle MacLachlan should be hiring the dumbest guy anyway. But secondly, you know how you pay your friend back with money? By getting a promotion, earning more money, and paying him the fuck back. Like, because later, Fred's like, now that I'm a big celebrity, Bon, you better get the steak back from the dog. And you're just like, the fuck?
Yeah, Fred throughout this movie turns into such a snotty nouveau riche asshole.
Yes, he does.
Well, it's we were talking about Back to the Future. It's McFly going, what, do we become assholes or something? Like, yes, you become assholes
yes, you do.
Or something. Like, he is such a colossal prick in the second act of this movie.
Now, there is kind of an amusing gag at this point with the paper boy who's distributing the paper, and they've got the original Fred Flintstone on it they're tossing.
Yeah, all the photos, like in newspapers, are like the cartoon Fred Flintstones.
Yeah. And of course, he tosses the paper at the Flintstone house and shatters because it's not paper. It's still Ten Commandments slabs.
It's a funny bit. The one thing that doesn't work for me as far as these bits go, they have TVs, which is really something.
Because TVs like, powered by electricity.
Yes. Because, like, everything else is powered by dinosaurs. So, like, you could even do a thing where there is a Dictabird kind of thing, and we'll get to the Dictabird because it's done by Hedley Lamarr.
Yes, it is.
Harvey Korman.
Yep. The late, great Harvey Korman.
From
the
Blazing
great,
Saddles.
Which also is the great Gazoo from the original Flintstones.
Right, which is, again, that's a wonderful callback.
He reminds me a lot of the character Gex. Remember that video game, Gex?
Mm-hmm. I heard of it. I never played it.
Sure, totally. Totally, totally. But like what would make sense is if you had a radio shaped thing and inside was clearly a Dictabird telling you the news. The idea that there's a television. Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a, and by the way,
Cave News Network.
Yeah. And you know, what'd be
CNN, Matt, stop laughing at these dumb rock puns.
I will not stop laughing at the dumb rock puns.
Oh boy.
Man, weed would do something to Matt that I can't even imagine. No, but I will say, what you should do, though, like Don Messick, the guy who was Scooby-Doo, is a voice on the original Flintstone. Like, you have that, like, Hanna-Barbera click. Frank Welker's in there making noises for Dino.
Yeah.
He should be a Dictabird in the box who's doing all the different voices for these people, because the reason TV exists is we're all pissed at Fred Flintstone because he fired us all at the plant. Well, it'd be great if it was one dude trying to do all the voices. Like, you see the interview, and then it's just Welker going, like, he fired us, he fired us, he fired us. And he's this one Dictabird who's trying to do all the voices to get the news across.
That would be interesting.
That's a bit. TV shouldn't exist in this world. Like, it's bad enough that they do movies, but at least movies, there's still a dinosaur doing some shit.
Movies are understandable because all you need is some sort of a light which you can get from an animal.
Behind
and like, yeah.
And I know the logic of the Flintstones makes sense only if you're at the Creationist Museum in Kentucky. But
didn't that shut down?
It did. It went bankrupt. There was another guy somewhere else in the Midwest who's trying to make a theme park based around Noah's Ark that also went bankrupt.
Well, anyway, first and foremost, hooray on that news. But when Fred becomes a new executive, he goes into his office, he meets the Dictabird, which is Hedley Lamarr, and then he meets Sharon Stone, who is
Halle Berry.
She is just flirting with him so hard, it becomes absolutely ridiculous.
Well, and the whole idea is that Vandercave is going to embezzle money.
Yep.
Right? And we need Flintstone to sign off on it, so he's the one who goes to jail. But the whole way to do it is to make sure that Halle Berry seduces him. In a way that makes him never look at the paperwork.
Because he's, at one point, he's like, you know, I had some contractors on my house, and they're real pirates. He's like, you don't need to read that, Mr. Flintstone.
And the Dictabird is like, hey, asshole, read whatever they put in front of you. I've been around a lot.
What was that one line where she was offering him coffee, and it's like, how do you take it? In a cup? Bold choice, Mr. Flintstone.
That was funny as hell. I'm sorry, that's a scene out of The Graduate. Miss Stone, are you trying to seduce me?
Like, Wilma pretty obviously knows she's trying to seduce him because yes. She turns up in the office and there's some cat fighting going on.
Yes, there is.
It would be even funnier if it was a real cat fight.
As in two cats show up at the office and start fighting?
Maybe like some sort of proxy thing, maybe, or maybe they just start pulling
that
each other's
horrible
hair.
CGI cat that clips in like a bad Windows 95 screensaver.
We've already seen Halle Berry as a bad cat, so no.
Previous
saying
episode,
no.
Catwoman number 250, was that?
I
thereabouts.
Think so, yeah. Anyway, after all that, we get to Kyle MacLachlan testing Fred Flintstone's loyalty, which is he orders him to fire Barney because Barney got the lowest score.
Which was really Fred's score.
Yes.
Which leads to the most awkward scene because, like,
oh, that,
they're throwing, that's... like, a party for Fred, like, his promotion after a pretty aggressive, like, yeah, you got promotion sex the night before.
With Walk the Dinosaur as the music at the party.
That's right.
And that scene was so painful to watch. Like, dramatic irony. The viewer knows something that the characters don't.
Well,
he knows
okay.
he has to fire Barney, and everyone is cheering him on, and he is feeling so guilty. That hurt to watch.
Well, and, okay, so Barney is like, Fred, we got you this gift. It's this. It's like a leather satchel.
It's a briefcase, yeah, I think.
It's a gorgeous briefcase. And he's like, Bon, I can't accept this. I can't accept it, Bon. And he goes, why not? And it's in front of this party. And you know what you do? You accept it, and then you tell him later.
Yeah.
Because this is like, because your ass is fired! And you're just like, what is happening?
Did you notice in the next scene when Fred shows up at the corporate board meeting, he still has that briefcase?
He does. He kept it. The guy's a prick.
Yes.
And I mean, he's a prick right from the beginning. And also, this is a bit like right out of The Simpsons too. Like, you need to be doing anything for your friends. And you just turn into an asshole. Because again, Fred is dumb as shit.
Well, to be fair, they let the Rubbles live with them and rent out their house.
That's, I think, when
we're living on the street, Bud. Fred.
That's, I think, when we get to the scene at the barbecue where it's like, hey, Bon, you like your steak where? That one's yours, where Dino steals it.
Oh, my God. He's such a prick. And, I mean, again, it's funny because Wilma and Betty, their chemistry, for lack of a better term, chemistry, is exactly like the show. They get along thick as thieves the whole time. They're very good together, right?
Yeah.
I'd say so. And like,
there's that scene in the department store that's kind of weird, where they smash up Betty's credit card
and Bam Bam goes full feral child and just starts destroying everything.
Oh, Bam Bam is the feral kid from The Road Warrior.
Oh, dude, we didn't really talk about this, but there's like an adoption scene, which is crazy. And like, the first thing that comes out is like an orangutan child.
Yes.
And
who belongs to the Hendersons.
The Hendersons. That was a good one.
Yeah, Harry and the Hendersons. But, like, Bonnie's like, we'll love him as our own. And you're just like, all right, but he's going over there. They bring out Bam Bam, which is just, like, a Jonathan Taylor Thomas clone. I don't know what's that. Like, he's got, like, he's got a mullet, and he's blonde, and he's short. I say that. My wife, when I was watching it, goes, is Pebbles an Olsen twin? I'm like, she looks like she's not, but like, that's what this is. This is all Disney Channel nonsense. But he goes, he was raised by mastodons. And the question immediately, but like, Fred and Wilma are there because at this point, Wilma knows. So she's like, we want to be there to support our friends. But like, this part makes sense. We're your neighbors. We're your friends. We would do anything for you. Later on, there's a joke where they're like, we don't need the Rubbles. We'll find new friends. There's 40,000 other people on Earth. And you're just like,
oh, there you
okay.
go.
What is happening?
I'm also still not clear. This is around the same time that we were talking about after Barney's fired. What are Stone and MacLachlan's plans?
Their idea is two things. First of all, imagine there's a budget.
Imagine there's a budget. Okay.
Question mark, question mark, question mark, profit. No. The idea is that they're going to take the entire budget for salaries, get rid of the employees, hire, like, build this crazy contraption to smash up the rocks instead of having employees. And it's designed to fail like the monorail in The Simpsons.
I was about to say, in my notes, I literally wrote, this is a Lyle Langley scam,
this
isn't
is exactly,
it?
This is the Music Man. And then they're to leave with all the pocketed money, again, like The Simpsons, and they're going to run to Rockapulco. And the reason this plan fails is he gets greedy and doesn't invite Sharon Stone. Had he invited Sharon Stone, she never would have turned on him. And he would have gotten away scot-free, right?
What was her line at the end? I was a very bad girl, but I was really good at it.
Yeah, and my comment, I was live tweeting this movie. I'm like, she's about to go to prison, and she still cannot stop vamping.
Yes.
Well, because she's hoping that if she got that D hard on Flintstone, he's going to help her get off. Let me try that again.
No, I don't think you need to.
No, I nailed it the first time. Ah! No,
Well, they
get our rocks off, Bond.
And that would have been perfect dialogue for this movie. They discuss that scheme at one point, and after that, they give Fred a quote-unquote bonus that comprises of some of the money they've embezzled, right?
I mean, I'm not going to say this is like an anti-capitalist movie, but it's like money corrupts immediately.
Yeah.
Because like he's like, this seems suspicious, and he goes, here's a bunch of clams, and he's like, all right, I'll do whatever you tell me.
Yeah. I commented that whole thing is to make it look plausible that he was stealing, because he immediately goes and spends all the money.
Right.
Dude, this is act three of Goodfellas. This is just like, what are you doing with a Cadillac? The good coats are in the back. Like,
I got the most expensive tree they had on the lot.
That's right. Exactly. And he goes, don't worry. It's in my mother-in-law's name. She's going up the rim.
So they like get a new car and they build like another story on their house.
Yes.
Which also question. Because these things are powered by Fred's 2 feet, the fuck does it matter if you get a fancier car?
It looks nicer, I guess.
But they're like, there's like all these things about mileage and speed on the sides, and I'm just like, no. What'd be great is, I mean, there's jokes about slavery in this, which is weird. But like, if there was like a little dinosaur in it that ran instead of you, like a little hamster on a treadmill.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That's a joke.
And they get a new dishwasher. That becomes an important plot point later.
Yeah, when Jonathan Winters shows up, stay tuned in a second. Holy shit.
Well, the biggest scene that happens here is after this big bonus and all the shit that Fred buys, he takes his wife to, what is it, Cavern on the Green?
Cavern on the Green, a standard Cavern on the Green joke, where they hear the BC-52s.
Local heroes, BC-50. Well, relatively local heroes, BC-52s.
They're from University of Georgia.
Yes, they're from Athens.
UGA 2007 here, I claim them.
Rock Lobster. How did they not make a Rock Lobster?
How did they not do that song? What song did they do?
Something specifically. So earlier in this movie, we hear that Bedrock has a theme song, the Bedrock Anthem, and they play the Bedrock Anthem,
it's
right?
It's the same song that was on the radio in that first scene where Fred and Barney are riding home together.
By the way,
Bedrock, Twitch.
Which is a terrible song, but also makes no sense, because if you have radio waves, you've got to... Again, there should be a little bird who's singing it, voiced by Fred Schneider or whatever... Right?
Instead, we get Fred Schneider in the full Flintstones, I don't even know what to call it, like the Moo Moo?
The Moo Moo tunic thing, and most of the original B-52s. At this point, I think they'd broken up.
They were still together, but...
I thought there was one that had left. Whatever.
Maybe.
And meanwhile, Barney has been working a series of increasingly menial or even outright dangerous jobs. Like, at one point, he uses a test dummy
He's a crash test dummy, which is... And he's a very 1994 joke.
And he's a waiter at the restaurant, and Fred is such a jerk to Barney,
busboy,
that Barney finally loses his temper and decks Fred, and there are CGI birds flying around his head.
Which, okay, first of all, two things. It sucks because it's a three companies gag in that Betty is there and she doesn't know what her husband is doing. But second of all, you know what? If I show up at a restaurant and you are down and out, Matt, let's say, and you're my waiter, you know what I'm not? I'm not an asshole to you. Like, this is such a prick move for no reason for anyone.
Well, I wouldn't say it's for no reason, because Fred treats Barney like absolute shit. Now, get me a clean spoon, Bon.
But he's our hero. He needs to eventually redeem himself. And I will say, in the third act, we have a lynch mob, so we're almost there.
Which,
they tricked him into signing off what he thought were signing vacation for all the workers. He was really firing them.
Yes.
Right.
That's why are you hating
on me, Barney? I gave them all a nice long vacation. No, you gave them a permanent vacation.
This is where Barney's watching a Cave News Network to find that out, I believe.
Yeah, and then the rubbles leave, and then Betty, Wilma, and
Pebbles go back to obnoxious mother-in-law's house.
Yeah, which you would.
Well, there's that big scene where Wilma, after the restaurant, Wilma's just like going, I don't need this necklace. I don't need this luxury lamp. And then she breaks the TV, and that's apparently
what gets Fred angry.
Yes.
This is all 1950s shenanigans, and it's really something.
Again, it's Jackie Gleason comedy, who back in the day was a remarkably funny guy, but I don't think he would have much of a career if he tried to do the same thing today.
But it wouldn't surprise him either. Like, that's the other thing. Like, there's a way you could do the Flintstones where you update them to the modern sensibilities, and they didn't try that, and that's what's weird.
They did try that. Seth MacFarlane was hired to do that for Fox, and then they canceled it
immediately. And you can find the pilot, I believe. I've seen it.
I've seen some artwork from it. I've never seen the pilot, if it exists.
Yeah, and meanwhile, at the time, roughly the same time, the plan goes into action, and Fred has to go on the run from the law.
Right. And Halle Berry has a line like, if I were you, I would run.
There was even a made-for-TV movie about this scandal in the universe of this movie.
I will say, though.
It's like, I'm an executive. I'm embezzling.
Yes.
There's a lot
like stuffing money in a trench coat.
I mean, but a lot of this feels like it's informed. I mean, we keep joking about Seth MacFarlane, but feels informed by The Simpsons. Because there's a lot of season 2 and 3 Simpsons stuff that feels very much like this. There's even that episode where Principal Skinner, they think the mob killed him, and it's the same.
Yes. Oh, my God. That
is exactly this. And they even have the Neil Patrick Harris playing Bart Simpson. Like, yeah.
Anyway.
And so
he's like hiding in an alley. He gets fingered by his old garbage disposal.
Yeah. So he's pretending to be on the lam.
Matt phrasing.
That's right.
Nick was talking about him fisting the garbage disposal, so turnabout's fair play.
Yeah.
What we mean by fingering in this case, ladies and gentlemen, is that the old garbage disposal who had been replaced after Fred got the bonus is in the crowd of fired employees and just starts pointing his hoof at him and goes, "Let's start."
Well, and again, out of The Simpsons season 2, Danny DeVito is Homer's brother. Mm. Homer bankrupts the company, and then in season 3, he comes back to try to get back, and they're hobos around a campfire, right? And he goes, "I used to have an idea." And again, it's Danny DeVito, who they wanted to play Barney anyway. And it's Jonathan Winter doing the same bit. He goes, "That Flintstone ruined us all. Ruined us all.
Did you used to work at Slate's Quarry?"
Yeah, I used to work there.
And then he gets the line, he goes...
He's wearing a beard, by the way, when Fred infiltrates this camp.
And the pig goes, "Flintstone!" And he has to run away because under this bridge... everyone sees...
"Sometimes I feel like a..."
Which becomes Weird Al's parody. Flint's Bedrock Anthem is based on it.
You're right.
And meanwhile, I think Betty and Wilma get into Slate Co.'s office to get the dicta bird because they think that they can prove Fred is innocent.
Which then triggers the end of this movie.
Because they bring in the dicta bird to convince the workers not to lynch Fred and Barney, who shows up at the wrong time.
Oh, dude. So, two things which I realize. It's an Easter egg I realized right away. Barney is a ice cream man at night because at this point, again, almost anti-capitalist, he has to work 3 jobs to be who he is. He's driving an ice cream truck, and the ice cream truck is playing. Anyone catch the music? It's playing the Jetsons theme song.
I missed that.
Yeah, so wow. The ice cream truck is playing the Jetsons song, and Barney goes, "Hey, Fred, what's going on?" He goes, "Bonnie, I'm getting lynched!" And there's a lynch mob.
A literal lynch mob, by the way. They actually put a noose around Fred's neck.
And eventually Barney's too, who shows up wearing all white, which is something.
And Barney is such a people pleaser. He is still like giving them advice what ice cream they would like when they're about to hang him.
When they're robbing him blind, by the way. They're stealing from him. And they throw it over the arm of an oak tree like we're watching Mississippi Burning. This is something else.
A lynching played for laughs.
Question mark.
Yeah.
but something.
They don't go through with it because McLaughlin is stealing all the money he's embezzled to go to Rockapulca.
And does not invite Halle Berry. She goes, now I've noticed that there's only one ticket here, Mr. Vandercave. And had he bought her the ticket and killed her, that's it. No one is safe. Like, he is so short-sighted with this.
So how does this end? I mean, well, obviously it ends with the bad guy getting covered in a substance that will be named after Slate's daughter, Concretia.
So eventually, Vandercave kidnapped Pebbles and Bam Bam.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a showdown at Slate's quarry. And in exchange for the Dicta Bird, which would clear Fred's name, he will free their kids, right? And it's the same Rube Goldberg contraption from before, where it throws rocks and smashes them under this thing that, again, it's all practical. It's like a grinder from some, like, How It's Made video made out of styrofoam and, like, fake claw things.
It's an OK Go music video is what's happening here.
And it looks phenomenal. I'm sorry. Like, for all the bad things in the script, and the script must have been a train wreck, this movie has such cool practical effects. And so Fred and Barney haven't quite made up yet, but they're like, look, we got to at least get along well enough to save our kids. So Barney is going to release the kids. Fred is going to stop the machine. And earlier, there's the, like Doc Brown, Vandercave has a prop of what this machine is that Fred accidentally destroys by firing a cannonball at the wrong part, and the whole thing turns to shit. So he's like, if I can do that, Vaughn, I can save the day. So he turns this catapult 90 degrees to hit the thing. And that's when Kyle MacLachlan shows up with an unnecessary plot device, which is a gun made out of a slingshot and a trigger.
Oh, yeah. I'd forgotten about the gun until you just mentioned it, but yeah.
It is stupid as shit and does not need to exist in this movie.
Well, still, though, Fred manages to launch that rock off and destroy the machine and...
And buries Kyle MacLachlan in cement.
Excuse you, concrete.
Yeah. So Fred gets his rocks off, frees the kids, and frees Barney, who had been knocked unconscious. And the runoff is a mixture of water and the slate, right?
Oh, yeah, Mr. Slate shows up at the end. Flintstone!
And it covers Kyle MacLachlan in this kind of, like, touchdown pose, touchdown Jesus pose, with this goo, which hardens. And Slate goes, Flintstone! And he goes, you're going to make Slate billions of dollars or hundreds of clams or whatever nonsense they say. And I'm going to name this for my daughter, Concretia. By the way, that is 100% a Flintstone joke. I believe 100% they made that on the show. You will be in charge of our concrete branch. And Fred fucks it up.
He doesn't fuck it up. He just realizes he doesn't want to be an executive anymore.
Yeah, but you know who should be then the whole time? Barney!
That's a good point.
And the only thing he asks for is 2 weeks vacation and the cost of living, which is fine. But Barney, get Barney his job back. At the end, Barney still is unemployed.
I thought he did.
Well, maybe it's just kind of assumed, but it's not explicit.
But, like, if anyone should be the executive, it's Barney, who proved himself the most intelligent, saved the day. And, by the way, if you're Fred, you take the job, and then you ask, like, and then you hire Barney back. But instead he's like, nah, Mr. Slate, I just want a week off at the end of the year. I guess.
I think the whole point is he recognized he'd become a power-tripping asshole and decided he didn't want it anymore.
But it doesn't help anyone in the end.
Well, he gets everyone a cost of living increase and a vacation.
Great, great.
Workers of the world unite.
No, it's just that, like, he just made them the richest company on the planet. And he's like, can I have 2%? And he gives everything else up. He's back to being broke. Anyway. And then we get our last joke, which is him putting out the cat. He brings in the dog and puts out the cat. They go back. Yak, don't talk back.
The movie ends. They go back to the drive-in theater. They go home, and then we get the famous scene from the cartoon where the cat and dog are put out, and then they jump back in.
Giant ribs, which tips over the car.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then they go home. Fred gets locked out, and he's banging on the door, going, "Wilma!"
And we also get the, they come out of, like Matt released at the beginning, their own movie. And then we get the trailer for Tar Wars, right? It's like it said, coming soon, Tar Wars on the sign. By George Lucas. He goes, no. You should talk to Spielrock. I'm Spielberg. You know, I can't do anything with the movie. You son of a bitch! But anyway, at the end, you know, he puts out the cat. This CGI cat looks terrible.
You know, Steven, I've got some characters available. You already cast one of my actors. Do you want to know who's available for my staple? Frank Booth. He'll call Fred Flintstone a motherfucker for free.
You know who would have fit in here? Everett McGill. Everett McGill would have...
Oh, from Quest for Fire.
From Twin Peaks.
Yes, I know.
Or Patreon episode Silver Bullet, sign up for Patreon.
But he's a tall motherfucker who could have swung a club pretty hard.
Quest for Fire, he already played a caveman.
Right, but I'm just saying.
Also, License to Kill, he was in that.
He was. What is the pie situation in Bedrock? Is it good apple pie or cherry pie or...
Well, you can't just go after the pie at first there, Nicholas, or Fred Flintstone. You've got to wait for the pie. It has to be ready.
So five people can faceplant into it like that fucking vial of beer they have and that horrible beer. By the way, you never share a crock pot of... In the bowling scene... Four men stick their face in a giant bucket of beer.
You've never been to Dragon Con with giant buckets of apple pie?
Oh, God. My heart just, I need another heart pill.
Actual apple pie? Now I'm interested.
No, the liquor.
Dang it.
The liquor.
Yeah. Hats off to friend of the show, Nick Hoffpower, who makes a hell of an apple pie.
As does some friends of the show, Mary and Mark.
Yes, they do. In the meantime, I think we've talked about this monstrosity enough. Matt, final thoughts.
I really enjoyed this movie, and I would definitely recommend you see it. I mean, I don't know if it's worth seeing more than once, but it's definitely enjoyable. And I ran a 5K this morning, which is in late June, supporting Mutual Aid in Myanmar. We're helping them fight for their freedom from the military coup. So if you could check them out, that would be great.
Great.
All right, cool. I don't hate this movie. I mean, it's got a 4.9 on IMDb. At least it was last I checked. But it's so innocuous, and the cast is great, and the practical effects are great. I can't hate it. I don't think it's appropriate for kids necessarily, not out of any adult themes, but just because it's more complex than it needs to be. This is one of those where, I don't know, if it's ever on cable randomly, yeah, you can watch a bit of it, and you won't be the worse for wear. Do I actively recommend you seek it out? Nah.
I'm between you two. For me, it's 100% a what's it. Like, I think you've got to see it. They've never done practical effects this way. Like, this is remarkable. I don't know if I would say it's a beautiful movie or a charming movie, but I've never seen anything like this. Like, the effects are incredible. The soundtrack is nothing until the BC-52s show up. But the cast is great. They're doing their part. Everyone is in it to win it. It's just it's a novelty. Like, this is one where you get everyone around, pour a couple cold ones, and you just watch the hell out of this. Because this movie is just, woo! In fact... We the way we do this is a little bit behind the scenes. And by the way, welcome the fuck to season 8.
Woo!
This is our opener for season 8. But the way we do this is we all get together, whether it's at a sports bar or brewery, and we list them out. I was just talking to friends about this. Because again, season 8, we've done more than 300 episodes. And we're talking about what to do. And people had assumed we had done this movie. Like, friend of the show, Kelly Copsey, was just like, you haven't done this yet? I'm like, yeah, how have we not done? That's why this is the season opener. This is an amazing, like, this is 100% a slice of our childhood. And is it great? No, but you gotta see it, man. I'm with Matt. Like, it's funny at times, but like, holy hell, this movie you have to have seen.
First and foremost, I congratulate you on getting Kelly's inflection just right. Yeah, that's pretty much. I'm pretty sure I actually saw this in theaters way back in the day.
Yeah, I don't know if I see this in theaters, but this is a Hollywood Video rental. 100%, 1,000 times.
Hollywood Video, R.I.P.
R.I.P. Well, I mean, the staff at my local ones were kind of inexperienced, shall we say, but.
But yeah. I mean, again, it's John Goodman. It's like Rick Moranis. Like, I'm there. I'm there yesterday just for those two. And again, like, Kyle MacLachlan is someone I appreciated later. But, like, John Goodman, he was on Roseanne.
There you go.
Rick Moranis, he was on Ghostbusters. And I heard of both of those.
And Second City TV, which is an all-time classic.
I started off this year by watching their movie.
Strange Brew?
Of course I did.
Oh, there you go.
It was me cleaning up from New Year's by watching Strange Brew in this basement right here. So anyway, we're out of time and I've got a pizza that's just cooling for me. So I've been Nick.
Matthew W. Quinn.
This is Daniel.
And welcome to season 8, ladies and gentlemen.
Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. Mission Briefing is hosted by John Copsey. Podcasts are edited by Daniel Settis, and Patreon is edited by Nick Hoffman. Our engineer is Nick Hoffman. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from Incomtech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.